You're listening to Bit by Bit, July 24th, 2007. Hello and welcome. This is Bob Sprankle with Bit by Bit, a podcast for teachers by teachers talking about integrating technology into the classroom and the changing environment in the classroom in the 21st century. How's everybody doing? I am actually taking a little bit of solo time from hanging out with the family. We are down here in D.C. If you've been listening or reading my blog, that's why it's been taking me time to get some of the podcasts up from the Building Learning Communities Conference. But they're down at the pool, and I'm up here watching planes take off and land right out the window. We've been to the mall on Washington, Smithsonian, and today we went to the zoo, and we're just having a great time. But I'm trying to get some of these podcasts up. So here is the first presentation that I went to. One of the great things about going to BLC was here was all these people that I have been reading and admiring for years, and they're all at the same table. You know, they're all. It was just wonderful to meet all these people. So here's Darren Kurapatwa, who I've been a big fan of for many years, and got to meet and got to see his presentation, which is called "Learning the Guitar or Thinking About Innovation in Education." And Darren was kind enough to let me podcast it, and he has the slides to the podcast online, and I'll provide the link to that as well as his blog. So I will try to get some more out this weekend when I get back to Maine. I think we'll get back there Saturday or Sunday, and I'll try to get another show up. And I do know that we have a Seedling show coming on Sunday as well. So sit back and enjoy Darren Kurapatwa.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Good morning. I'm going to start from doing that.
Hi. My name is Darren Kurapatwa. I'm the Department Head of Mathematics at Daniel McIntyre Collegiate Institute, which is a really big name for a grade 9 to 12 high school. For those of you outside North America, that means that our students are age 14 to 17 plus. I'm assuming that you all came this morning because you wanted to learn how to play guitar. So, now what I'm here. How are we doing? Oh, thank you very much. I don't usually click them. Let's see. If I can stick it out. How's that? I'll try not to shout. Okay. So I teach high school, and this morning I want to talk about learning the guitar. When I was here at BLC last summer, the last presentation I gave was called OLE, Orchestrating Learning Ecology, or How to Tangle. And in that presentation, I have a nasty habit of trying to fit 8 presentations into one. So this year I'm trying to limit myself to 3 presentations per presentation. So what I want to talk about is I'm going to talk about very concrete pedagogies, and specifically in this presentation, how I use blogging and the pedagogies that I use and that I've developed in connection with blogging. I'm going to take for granted that you know what a blog is, you know how it works. Later I'll take for granted that you know what other tools are. Stop me if you don't, and I will give, you know, the synopsis explanation. But there's people here at the conference this week that can answer all those questions, and feel free to come up to me and ask me too. If at any point I go too fast, holler and shut me down, slow me down. I'm going to get to what's going on here in just a moment. But to begin, I wanted you to hear one of my students' voices.
As a student here at DMCR, I have classes that participate in blogs and classes that don't. And I think there's actually a huge difference, because sometimes I know me on a personal level, I may have other things on my mind when I'm in class once in a while. And with the blog, when I go home, I can, you know, once I'm focused, I can refer back to what happened in class, where if there's nothing like that, then I'm kind of lost for whatever happened that day, especially if my mind's elsewhere. With the blog, I have that choice of going back and asking questions, not just going and asking the teacher, I don't understand anything that happened yesterday, because I don't even know if I understand it or not.
The picture's not Brittany. This is not one of my students. This is a picture I pulled off Flickr, fit with my theme. But that was Brittany, and I'll end where I began. I'll let give Brittany the last word today as well. So this is my last presentation at BLC. I said it's kind of like the Lord of the Rings. It ends and ends and ends and ends. This one begins and begins and begins and begins. So does anybody know what Twitter is? You have Twitter accounts? Okay. What I've got displayed over here on the left-hand side is something called Twitter Cam. What it is it's currently logged into my Twitter account. So it seems like it's taking time to actually pick up the tweets, but eventually you'll start seeing all the people on my network, and they should start popping up. I'm really hoping that they do. In the meantime, if you want to participate in the conversation as I'm talking, and you will have something you want to say, but maybe you don't want to interrupt me. I know that happens a lot with my students. They have something to say, but don't raise their hand. So go ahead and send it to your Twitter account, but you got to add me as a friend first. Now, for those of you that don't know what Twitter is, there's computers around that you can use, or you can lean over and look on someone else's. And you go to twitter.com and create an account now. It's free. So you'll see that button on the right-hand side. When you go to twitter.com, you'll see this, or you can just create an account. Add me as a friend. My good friend Joyce Valencia is logged into my email account, and as you friend me, she's going to friend you right back. So that whatever you tweet on Twitter is going to eventually appear on this screen as well. Now, people.
Yeah? What is your Twitter name?
Here it is at the bottom. Twitter.com/DeepKirabatwa. That's me.
So all we have to do is.
So if you go to that, once you've got an account, if you go to that URL, that's my Twitter account. There'll be a little on this panel. You'll see add as a friend. We'll all become friends. And as you do that, Joyce is going to get flooded.
It's quiet right now. Scary.
And I just want to, I'm curious why. Yeah, I'm going to try refreshing it.
There's a Skype cast going on too, but there was no Skype on this too.
So there's my last tweet was received from David Warlick, and he was hoping for Wi-Fi on the ferry. He's always hoping for Wi-Fi on the ferry. Okay. Anyways, Twitter camp sometimes takes a while to warm up, but it'll come. Now, while we're talking, you may not have Twitter, or maybe that doesn't appeal to you. You don't want to do that. So at NEC this year, David Jakes, at that URL, talked about something called a chatcast, which means that if you have a Skype on your computer, which you can download for free from Skype.com, you could go into a Skype chat. And anybody that's here, you know, you can get each other's names on your Skype chat. I was doing this in the last session during the keynote. Tim Tyson was doing his keynote, and Will Richardson and David Jakes and Dean Shoresky and Joyce was there. We're all in Skype talking about what Tim was saying, as he was saying it, kind of reflecting on it as it was going on. This is kind of like sensory overload. This, for me, I'm kind of getting adjusted to it. If you're not used to it, it's a major learning curve. But for our kids, this comes, you know, they take this in with the air they breathe. So if you want to get a taste for what that's going on. Now, my purpose of doing all this, while I introduce all these different ways to communicate or back channel while I'm talking, let me explain. I'm doing three presentations. I'm doing learning the guitar, doing another one called What Can I Do That You Couldn't Do Before? And they're all really kind of based on this one, learning the guitar. And then I'm going to talk more about concretely, how do you look at one of these new tools that they talk about, look at its functionalities and say, well, then how do I use that in an educational context? That's my second presentation, which I'm doing tomorrow. Okay? And today you'll hear me talk about links, tags, and RSS. That feeds into tomorrow's presentation. Later on, I'll talk about Bloom's taxonomy in this presentation. When I'm talking about assessment in my third presentation on Friday, which is called Developing Expert Voices, that kind of branches off from this presentation as well. So I'm going to talk about kind of my overall philosophy of education, in particular, how do I use blogs in education. Then I'm going to talk about how I generally look at these new tools as they come online, and how do I think about them in order to weave them into my pedagogical practice. And then finally, I want to look at this from the perspective of assessment. So that's my plan. And by doing these Twitter, Skype chats, chat casts all around, what I'm hoping to do is tear down the walls. And like I try to do in my classroom, like any of you could find out what's happening in my class at any point, any day, because my kids are publishing it daily. We'll talk about that today. So I'm really trying to open it up. And by having, for example, if this ever actually starts... yeah.
Just I'm trying to invite you.
Yeah. Dekirapawa,
and then what? Is that it?
Yeah, you go twitter.com/Dekirapawa.
I'm invite friends.
And at the right-hand side, you'll see a link that says add me.
Oh, add me?
Yeah.
It says invite at the bottom.
No, don't invite me. Just add me once you're ready. Because I'm already on the Twitter network.
Okay, so.
And you go, you're at your home. Mm-hmm. So instead of twitter.com, you go to twitter.com/DKirapawa. That'll show you my Twitter page. And then there'll be a link that says add me.
So what are we doing?
When, if you go.
Okay, they're starting, Darren. I'm getting into them.
Actions add.
If you go to that URL, twitter.com/DKirapawa, now that's my own account, you'll see here on the right hand side.
All right, so we have
these are the last few things that I said on Twitter. And then you'll see on the right-hand side, now I'm logged into my own account, so it doesn't say add me. But over here on the right-hand side, you may have to scroll down. Use the smart board. Down on the right-hand side, maybe underneath the pictures that you've got, you'll see a link that says add me. You go ahead and add me. When you add me, Joyce is logged into my email account. She'll get that notification. And she'll go back and add you. Then you'll be in my Twitter stream. And once you're in my Twitter stream, whatever you tweet will appear here on this panel. Eventually, we hope. And that's the overall plan. So like I said, this presentation begins. So now let me really begin. Thinking about innovation in education. During revolution, scientists see new and different things when looking at familiar instruments in places they've looked before. So I'm going to come back to that quote. That's Thomas Kuhn. And I want to start with a video. Watch this. I start a talk about innovation in education with this fellow playing guitar?
It's on YouTube,
the links. My presentation's already been uploaded to slideshare.net. All the links are active on SlideShare, and you can access it. Yeah. My account, again, dcurepathway, you can find me on SlideShare. And eventually I'll publish it on my blog after the conference. Everything's on my blog, you can get there.
I'll answer that. So I've played guitar for 40 years. First of all, I want to ask you for tuning, action on the neck, and then I would go on the triangles.
Yeah, I play guitar too, and when I saw this fellow play guitar, I mean, I was just blown away. I don't know how you feel from seeing that, but I was like, wow. And I started to think, like, how did he learn that? Like, did he have a teacher that sat down and said, listen, whatever you do, don't take the guitar, put it perpendicular to your lap, get one arm over the side, the other one over on the fretboard, strum with this. That's all this hand does, is strum, something you pick, you know, and this hand just hold down occasionally, tapping along, but mostly just playing chords. Well, this guy looks at a familiar instrument in a completely different way, and he lays that guitar flat on his lap, and because now he's using both hands, forget about strumming. If you watch him, strumming's incidental. It's not the main thing that he does. The main thing he's doing is kind of tapping and pulling off and sliding. And because he's got both hands, right, and he's got full range of motion from pinky to thumb on the strings, he's accessing a range of tones and notes. Like, all of that was one guitar. And he's playing lead and rhythm and drums, and it's all happening at the same time. I'm like, my God, how did he learn that? He taught himself. I'm sure he did. But what did he do? Like, how did it occur to him to do that? I think he said, look, this was built to be used in this way. Maybe I can do something else with it. So I'm going to talk to you about one of the instruments that I use. And the metaphor I'm going to use is learning the guitar. And I'm going to talk about all the different kinds of things that we do in connection with playing guitar in the context of, in this first presentation, looking at blocks. And I'm going to talk to you about the pedagogy that I've evolved and how I use it. And I think of the blog as my guitar. And I don't play it with one arm over the side and one arm under the fretboard like that. I lay it on my lap. So let's take a look at what's going on. So, you know what, let's start. Let's actually look at one of my blogs. I thought in this last semester, I've been blogging my class for about 3 years now. Some people have called me the blog father of mathematics. It's math. I've got some friends that whenever this actually kicks in, you know, I'm hoping it'll come up eventually. I know it sometimes takes a while, the Twitter camp. And when I invited the people on my network to participate, and there's people from, you know, New Zealand and across North America and Europe, and I hope you get to see them all here, they asked, is there going to be any math? And my answer was, yes, there's going to be math, but the math is going to be beautiful, and there will not be a test, okay? So let me show you some beautiful mathematics. I want to show you one of my blogs, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to take you on a breakneck speed on a tour of what's happening on one of my class blogs. Understand, of course, the semester's finished. And so a lot of the work that you might normally see, you'd see an active living blog. My blog is going to have an active lifespan that lasts a semester, although it could go beyond that. This is an AP calculus class that I teach in the last year. I'm going to talk mostly about what's happening on the right-hand side. You take a look at what's happening over on the left. But on the right-hand side, you see answer tips. Answer tips is a tool that you can put on your blog or any website, really. It's really cool because if you click on any word in the blog, then answer tips goes and finds the definition of that word and provides links to other resources. So answer tips drenches a web page in content. Everything that's typed on that page is now content rich, which provides, it looks like my connection's a little slow. There it is. So it gives you the definition, elementary rules, etc. And then if you scroll down, Leibniz notation, it goes quite involved. And then you can learn more, and it pulls sources out of Wikipedia, etc. So that's answer tips, and that's on all of my blogs. I used to have a Yak Pack widget there, which was like a walkie-talkie, and I experiment. There's new tools come online. I see if that's of value to my student, and it'll appear in the top corner of the blog. On the right-hand side, you see the contributors. Myself and all of my students are contributors on the blogs. There's three names here that are not students in my class. Those three names are Roland, and we've got Lonnie, and I guess E is not on this one. There's a third one, E. Roland is a math teacher from Kentucky. And Lonnie is a retired teacher, now a curriculum developer in Ohio. And E, which is short for Yamina. Any math teachers in the audience? E is an interesting nickname for a math. She's a professor of mathematics. Anyway, she's a professor of mathematics at the University of Michigan. Lonnie, Roland, and Yamina are mentors for my students on the blogs. So when my students are writing and posting things on the blogs, the mentors come in and leave them comments. Amina, as a math professor, kind of focuses on the mathematics and challenges them to be tighter with their definitions and do good work. Lonnie tends to focus more on motivational issues, and Roland, as a former high school teacher, now working for a nonprofit organization about weaving technology into schools in Kentucky, he talks to them about tightening up the math, but also motivational stuff. On the right-hand side, you'll see email me. Students, when they start up with the blog, they email me, and I invite them back. I'm not going to talk about mechanics today, though. Countdown is countdown to a test. Like it says, zero now because they already graduated, but we had countdown to test dates. We had countdown to exams, the AP exam, so they knew exactly how many days were left. That was me really just playing. There's a search feature on the blog. The calendar became really important for an assignment that we did called Developing Expert Voices, which I'll talk about later, but every student kind of chose their own due date, and so in order for everybody to know when their work was being published, because my students publish everything, they don't hand it in, they publish it, they saw this on a calendar and told them exactly how many days were left, and so everybody was able to know what we were doing. On the left-hand side, you see the first scribe. I'm going to talk about that a little more. I won't get into it now, but this is a student writing a summary of what they learned in class that day. That's one student, one day. This is kind of neat. This is a map that shows where people have visited our class blog from. And since September, I think the class blog has been visited by almost 21,000 hits on the class blog. And you can see where they're from, every red dot is a hit. We've been hit from every continent except Antarctica. So if you go down there and there's wireless, come visit my blog. Anyway, continuing down, there's a Flickr badge. My students did a project on Flickr. I'll talk about it tomorrow. And so it's aggregated here and it's updated dynamically. Again, that's still one student on the left summarizing what they learned in class that one day. On the right-hand side, you see a list of links. The links show that they're permanent. They stay there all the time. There are resources. There's something called the Scribe List, which I'll show you. And then other resources for the class that they can access. Labels. Students label every post that they write. So it has to be labeled. Now, with this class, they only had two, but now I've kind of formalized it in the last semester. They label their name. They label the nature of the post that they're writing. And they label the unit that it applies to, the unit of study that it applies to. What that allows me to do, and well, more, it allows them to, if they need to review one particular unit, so in mathematics you study something like circular functions, they go click on the label circular functions, and the blog loads only things related to circular functions, including these daily summaries by the students, their personal reflections, and any links for learning that I've added as resources to pull in from all over the net for them. It also, in terms of, for me, because every student labels their work with their name, I just have to click on their name and all of that student's work loads for the entire semester. So then there's the archives on the right-hand side. Again, on the left, we reach the end of that one student's post. And then you see Bob again, Bob. Bob is an acronym that stands for Blogging on Blogging. Blogging on Blogging is the title of a post that I write on every one of my class blogs early in the semester. Every student, one of the ways they acquire marks on the blog is every student before the unit test, and I prefer that they do it like 3 days before, but some of them do it the night before. But it's better if they do it 3 days before. They have to write a little reflection about where they are in their learning. Like, what did they understand? What are they still confused about? What do they need help with? Did they have an aha moment? Did kind of describe what that felt like. There's a list of kind of instructions, like what sorts of things students are to write when they write a blog. Blob is something they came up with. I called it blogging on blogging. They said it's blog, and then they have fun with it. They keep changing the feel. They have, anyway, you'll see later. That gives me some real good insight. Like, if they do it 3 days before, then I know where the class is confused. And as we're preparing for the test, I've got some really kind of focused insight as to exactly where my class is struggling with whatever the content is.
How many kids in the class?
Typical class is 25 to 30 kids, but the AP class tends to be small. Well, actually, next year I'm going to have 20 plus in AP. It's going to be a good year. This class had about, I think, 15 when we started, and we ended, I think, with 11. On the right-hand side,
could you manage 40? Could you manage 50?
Could you?
Using the simple part of the question is practically, where is there a limit where your ability to interact, their ability to interact,
kind of reaches saturation point.
Having mentors helps, right? Because then it doesn't have to all come from me. Also, encouraging them to interact with each other means that they're commenting on each other's work as well and helping each other. And you'll see, there's a real sense of community in the class.
Mm-hmm.
But to get to the crux of your question, there's a big difference between a class of, say, 26 and a class of 30. Okay? I mean, those people say it was four kids. That's a big difference, 26 and 30 kids in a class. 22 and 26 is another really big difference. So just four kids, well, as teachers we know, it's a lot of malarkey. It's a big difference. So when you say 40 and 50 kids in any classroom, I mean, my gosh, I pity the teacher who has to do that.
To the point you just made, right?
But if I had a class of 40, if I had a class of 50, I would continue to blog with them, and that would be a fundamental part of the class.
So being a mathematician, have you developed an equation that gives you the ratio of, if you're going to include all this extra technology, what the optimal class size is?
What's the optimum class size to blog?
Well, if while you're teaching, they're Twittering, and they're going to other sites, whatnot, how do you keep them focused, I guess?
My classroom, you got to understand that a lot of the work you're going to see, you have to understand, not me, it's the kids' work that you're looking at. Very little of the content on the blog is generated by me. Kids generate the content. In class, it's not like I haven't had an opportunity yet to do Twitter in class.
Okay.
Twitter is really new for me. I'm about 2 months in. Like some people, only a couple of days in. People in this room are minutes in. And I've been thinking about how to use it in the classroom. And I wrote a post on my blog called Twitter, the Ephemeral Learning Tool. I won't go into it now, but I have some ideas about the pedagogical applications of Twitter. There's a few other people thinking seriously about it, too. There's at least three of us that are looking at trying it out with our classes, different grade levels, and then we'll come back and we'll talk and we'll see what are the best practices. So next year we'll do Twitter.
But just generally speaking, even with like any blog interaction,
what's the optimal class size to blog? I actually don't like my AP class in terms of size. I would like there to be about around 20, I think, is kind of a good number. 18, 20 is a really good number. 11, I think, is a little bit too small, at least for my model. There's more than one model for blogging with classes. I'm writing an article coming out in the next issue, Coming of Age, about the various pedagogies associated with blogs. Okay. Talk to me about it afterwards. We'll get into it some more. Finishing up our tour, we've got the right-hand side is the chat box where they can chat with each other synchronously or asynchronously, and they often use that to get homework done. As I continue down, I jumped down too far. Now I have a feed window on the right-hand side there, feed window to other math blogs. This is a teacher of pre-calculus in Southern California, and his class also has a blog, and this is a window into their class. Every time they publish something, it appears here automatically through the magic of RSS. So now my kids have access to the content that their kids publish. He puts a feed window on his blog of my kids' blog, and his kids can learn from my kids, et cetera, et cetera. Now, if more of you do this, then we've got feed windows opening up into each other's classes. And like I was saying at the beginning of the presentation, the walls fall away. Right? Your classroom is no longer limited by four walls. Hey, on the left, Anne Skies from Calculus, was a post written by one of the mentors, Lonnie. She's, I'll just leave that, skip by. We have another Scribe post on the left. On the right-hand side, my students use Delicious, which is a social bookmarking tool. And so the Scribe posts collectively form what I call the textbook for the class. The students author the textbook. One student per day, one page at a time. Delicious is for each unit of study, the kids go find a site that already exists on the internet that has, maybe it's good instructional material, maybe it's an interactive quiz, maybe it's an animation. I don't care what it is, something that informs the content of what they're learning, and they put it into their Delicious account. They have to tag it with a unique course tag, which I create. And again, through the magic of RSS, I draw that into the blog. So these are the 10 most recent additions. There's something wrong with the date, because they were not added in December of 69. But my kids weren't alive then. But you can access the full archive by clicking on that link, and they get into every single thing that any student in that class, or really any student in the world, like if your students tag their stuff AP Calc 06, it's going to appear here. And so they would have access to all of that. And so as we continue down, we have another blog, and we're kind of finished our tour. You see those links, find out what this is all about, learn how to do it yourself. I do that with all my stuff. You could do this too. Those links explain how. And down at the bottom, again, we have another Scribe post. Another Scribe post. And at the bottom, there's our license. It's a Creative Commons 2.5 Canada license. It's non-commercial attribution share-alike license. That's my AP Calculus class. I'm going to quickly show you my Applied Math class. This is a grade 12 class. These are kind of, they're not high-functioning students, nor are they low-functioning students. They kind of fall somewhere in the middle. And they also have a class blog, and because that's not running quick enough, let's see if I can get that one. So this is their blog. Now this is the end of the blog, so you're seeing posts on the left. What I wanted to show you here that's a little bit different from the other, from the AP Calculus blog, is this stuff here on the left, slides. I recently, just a couple of months before the end of the semester, or a couple of months, now February, I got a smart board in my class. So, very excited. What are we going to do with a smart board? Well, now, we don't erase anything on the smart board. We just create a new page. And I preload the smart board with problems, etc. And I stand at the back of the room. The kids are at the front. And they go up, and they solve the problem. They usually work in groups when they think they've got the answer. Someone goes up, they write their solution. Again, I say nothing, stand at the back. Other students will look at that work and say, no, I think you made a mistake here. Well, you go up and fix it, take a different color, and they write their solution. And I let them work on it all together, and as a class, they figure it out. And when they're done, they've usually got the right answer. Sometimes they don't. I go up and I make comments about fine-tuning the work, saying, you know, like, this is well-expressed, this should be expressed a little better like that, etc. And we save all the slides, and I upload them to SlideShare and embed them on the blog. That takes me 5 minutes, maybe, every day to do that for three classes or four classes a day. And so there it is. And so the students have access to everything that happened in class. And they can go back and forth. And it's interactive here on the blog. So that's one of the things I wanted to show you there. What's different here in my Pre-Cal 40S class, you'll see a lot of the same tools. But what's different in this class is kind of down here at the bottom. I podcasted every single class we did in the last semester. That was an experiment. And if you wanted to actually see what they did, and again, by the magic of RSS, it gets sucked. So it's here, the five most recent podcasts from the class. So kids, at the end of the day, can go back and re-listen to the lecture. They're not going to listen to the whole thing. They can listen to just fast forward through the podcast, rewind and replay as many times as they need it. So this, for example, this is here toward the end of the class. I'll play it for you briefly. This one has an ad that appears at the beginning.
This podcast is part of the MyPodcast.com network. Go online right now and get your very own 100% free podcast, MyPodcast.com.
And then it has the intro music that comes with everyone. Now, that ad is not too offensive. The nice thing about this is there's no limits to the amount of the size of the files that I can put here, nor how many, so I have, like, infinite
purposes.
Yeah, now it's sound like a chipmunk.
We're getting a new phobia up there, I think. Phobia of the day. The word of the day is Mjolnir. The name of Thor's hammer. But the phobia... phobia of the day is brontophobia. Is that
why are you Yeah, why do I sound like Chim? I'm using GarageBand to record it, and for some reason, and so it's running in the background on the smart board, and like it's kind of like the old car GarageBand, it needs to warm up. So I don't know why it does that, but in a minute or minute and a half, my voice changes to normal.
It's like puberty.
Yeah, it's like I'm growing up every day. And the kids created something called the word of the day. And so the kid would come up and put a definition. Then another kid decides to be phobia of the day, and they just had that running on the sideboard. That's why you have this weird beginning to a math class. Then we jump into the content. This was another one. This was hosted on my school division servers, so I don't have that ad, but I ran out of space. That's why I had to go with another service. So that's what we've done here. And here comes the chipmunk.
Okay, so... if you Google it, it'll tell
us
the number one head is...
Okay, so that's the class, and it's all there for the kids. So that is very quickly, that's what my class blogs look like.
Yeah. How do you get to your class blogs?
On this presentation, which is on SlideShare, if you click on any of those, it will take you directly. Like, what I did was I clicked on this. Okay, so what can I do that I couldn't do before? New tools enable new pedagogies. I think there are, a recent article I read a while back said that the link and the tap are the two most significant technologies that have arisen in recent history. They're going to have the biggest impact, and I would add to that RSS.
The link and what was the second one?
Tag. And I would add to that RSS. Links means that with a link, it really doesn't matter where you are in the world, nor does it matter where the content is in the world. Because if you're in southern New Zealand, you're my neighbor. You're only as far away as a link. Everything can be brought together, can be connected using the power of a link. Like if you start to think about that, that's like a really powerful technology. Everything is one click away, potentially. If it's online, anyways, it's one click away. Tags are a fantastic thing. They allow you to categorize content in a way that's meaningful to you individually. Well, as a teacher, like what I use like a course tag. So my kids have content scattered across the internet in different places all over. But because they use a unique course tag, I can aggregate all that content and pull it into one place using RSS. Now, there's a teacher in the UK, Doug Belshaw, who has this idea called homework casting, where instead of using RSS to pull, he uses RSS to push. So kids have RSS feeds, they have maybe proto pages or something, and then he publishes an RSS feed that goes out to the kids with their homework cast. So links, tags, RSS, these three things really come together and it'll open up a substantial number of opportunities for us.
Can you explain what RSS is?
Yeah, very quickly, RSS stands for, I think technically it's rich site syndication, but colloquially it's called real simple syndication. What it means is that anything that has an RSS feed, RSS comes in two pieces. You have a magazine subscription ever in your life? Okay, so with a magazine subscription, there's two parts to that really. There's the subscription when you let the publisher know I would like to receive that magazine. And then there's your mailbox where the magazine arrives every month or every week, whatever it is. Well, that's RSS. RSS has two parts, a feed and an aggregator. The feed is the subscription, letting someone know that I want to receive that content. And an aggregator, the $10 word for a mailbox, it's a place where you collect whatever's coming in. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Now, all the stuff that I'm doing, like I was watching, had a conversation with someone at BLC last summer, and some of the presentations they were looking at and saying, yeah, that teacher's amazing, look what they're doing. But I didn't come here for that. I came here to find out what can I bring back to teachers in my school division or my school district or my school or me so I can do it. So I'm very much interested in making the stuff that I do replicable. I'm not very much interested in flash and show. I'm far more interested in making it possible for you to do it as well. I'm also interested in it being scalable. In other words, just because I'm teaching math, you should be able to do similar things no matter what your subject area is. Because I'm teaching grade 12 and you're teaching grade 3, it should be scalable. Some of these ideas, I'm hoping, will move across these boundaries. And it has to be sustainable. Because if it doesn't continue, right, if it's just one teacher does it and it doesn't get passed on to the next, if I can only do it this year because I'm prepared, like this year I'm going to make a push to invest a whole lot of effort into this year, and then I can't, after that I can't sustain it, well, that's not interesting. That's a flash in the pan. I'm not interested in that stuff. I'm not the only one thinking about these things. Bob here, this is Bob's.
Oops, you see what happened here is I had to change iPods because I ran out of batteries in the first. So here we go. Back to Darren. What a bad time to do it, right? He's talking about me.
Integrator for his school. So what he does now is he helps other teachers. But in a post on his blog, links, again, if you click on the picture, it'll take you to his blog. He talks about how his kids are moving from room 208 to room 209. And the next teacher is... We'll see if it comes up. And he's wondering if the next teacher is going to be able to do a lot of the stuff that he was doing with his kids. Mark Almas is another teacher in Seattle, and he teaches grade three. Your kids were grade four. Three and four. Okay, and Mark teaches grade three. And he had kids that were blogging with him, and at the end of the school year, they wanted to keep blogging over the summer, but then when they went into the next class in grade four, the kids wanted to blog. So the question was, is the next teacher going to be able to do that as well? And so they're thinking quite hard about the issue of scalability. Is it sustainable? Conrad Blagowski is a teacher in Ontario, Canada. He teaches grade 8 English language arts. And he talks in this post about moving between from being what he calls a blog architect, because he would have them build a blog and build a community. And he deleted it at the end of every school year and then began again the next one. And then he comes to regret that. I did that once, and I also regret it. I'll never delete a class blog again. They all stay. They're permanent. But he talks about moving from being an architect to being a gardener. And so that the blog should be sustainable and that the kids should continue the kind of learning that they were doing on their blogs.
I love this stuff and I think it's great. But in the end, you are doing traditional pedagogy in that you are lecturing to the kids, right? That's what you've got
part
recorded
of it.
On. Part of that. Do you see technologies eliminating that ever?
No. There's always going to be... There are times when you need to convey... I mean, look what I'm doing to you.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there are times... It's a very efficient way to get...
That's the way we have it. But is that... Do you see it another way happen?
Yeah. Like, I can also see, you know, myself standing at the back of the room letting you guys talk if we ever get to where it can't work. The technology is just another tool, another modality. Like, not every single one of my classes is a lecture. Sometimes it's group work. But with the advent of the smart board, that group work became permanent, and kids worked together on it, and then we preserve it on the blog. So it's not that we're doing away with things, and it's not that I'm not interested in creating more work for teachers, because believe me, I know, we're busy enough. But some of my classes are lectures. Some of my classes are group work. Some of my classes are tests. Some of my classes are a quiz, and some of my classes will be Twitter-pated lectures next year, experimenting. We'll see how it goes. I'll let you know. But where I will lecture and let the kids talk to each other about what I'm saying, much like I was hoping we would be able to get with them here. And lastly, replicable. Have you heard of the Flat Classroom Project or the Horizon Project? Okay, Flat Classroom Project is two teachers... one in Camilla, Georgia, rural Georgia, and another in Dhaka, Bangladesh, very urban, it's the capital of Bangladesh. Their classes got together, they had read, in the classes the kids had read Friedman's book, The World is Flat. They looked at the 10 flatteners, they paired up kids from each class, and as a group they had to publish on a wiki where they felt, what were the consequences of that flattener in the world of education and in the world of business. And they collaborated like that. Then they did the Horizon Project, I think they got two or three other teachers from other areas. And these projects become really big scale. They're global, and they're big scale projects, but I'm just wondering about the replicability of it. Like, and they were thinking about the same thing, too. Like, is it possible for you to do that in your classroom, or do you need their special skill set? Like, anyways, so, and they were looking at this. They invited me and three other teachers. There was Terry Friedman from the UK, there was Jeff Utick from China, and there was Joe McClay from Australia, and myself from Canada, and we were judges for the Flat Classroom Project to determine which kids had done the best work, so they invited us to participate in their classes in that way. in the Horizon Project, they really blew the top off of that, and they had people from all over the world participating in their classes. And afterwards, they're thinking really serious, like, how can we make this copyable so that people can do it? Or do you have to have their unique skill set? Right? We're kind of hoping the answer to the first question is yes, not the second. So, my favorite riff is the Scribe Post, which you saw a little bit of. The Scribe Post, and I wrote a post, I wrote an article that for the ebook Coming of Age. There's a link to the ebook Coming of Age here, and there's a link to my, which I also published the article on my blog, which you can read. It talks about the particulars of what a Scribe Post looks like. The instructions I gave to the students was, summarize what you learned in class today. Include enough detail so that anyone who is away sick or for any other reason should be able to try to pick up on what they missed. Over time, Scribe Posts will grow into the textbook for our course. So when you're writing, you're going to write the textbook, each of you, one page per day at a time. So when you're writing your page, if you think that a graphic will help, go ahead and put it there. If you think you can use color in a meaningful way, go ahead and put it there. And you saw samples of some of their work, and I'll show you more. I wanted you to hear what my kids say about the Scribe Post.
The Scribe Post is concise. It's not all over the page. It's not ranting on about, like, every other subject that doesn't even concern or what you want to get out of it. Like, the Scribe Post is like, bam, it's right there. This is what you have to learn.
And even if it is long, it's always a it combines a textbook with a computer.
From one student to another student.
Like, you teach while you're doing that. You learn while you teach other people. So, in a way, when you're in the Scribe Post, that's the part of the whole, like, the whole unit that you grasp the most, because that's the part that you're focusing on.
Yeah.
You take a good 2 hours writing your Scribe Post. That's not a big deal because you're learning what the content is from that day. It sinks in to you more than it would in other people because you're actually doing it.
I bet if you ask anybody in this room, they would tell you that they learned from the blog. It enhanced their learning experience in class.
Even though it's just a little bit, it did.
No, because the Scribe Post is more of a summary of everything. Because if you're going to look at all the slides and listen to the podcast,
it'll take a long time.
There's like a good hour of your every time gone to read the Scribe Post.
And as you said before, audio doesn't tell the true story all the time.
Yeah.
So you need more than just audio, more than just pictures to get the full story.
Go on. You heard the comment?
Yeah, right? 2 hours.
2 hours?
Ron said 10 minutes.
No big deal.
Well,
ten minutes to read.
10 minutes to read it.
Oh, to read it.
Not every kid spends 2 hours to type it. Some kids spend like a half hour, some kids spend less. I don't grade that very granularly. I don't have like a fine-tuned rubric. Like, as long as they publish what they learned that day, and whatever way they do that, they've written their Scribe Post. But what happens is you'll see an evolution in the kids' work from the beginning of the semester. I teach in a semester system, so if you're teaching full year, you'll see the evolution from September to June, or whatever your school year is. And you'll see this evolution that when they start, the first Scribe Post is a paragraph. That's it. It's just kind of, this is what we learned today, da-da-da, finish, okay, so long, guys. And then the next kid says, well, I'm going to drop in a graphic. And the next kid says, well, that was cool. I'm going to one-up them. I'm going to put two. And the next kid one-ups them and starts putting in color. And then the next kid one-ups them and pulls in an animation. The next kid one-ups them and does a slideshow. The next kid one-ups them and does a Google video. And so what ends up happening is, over time, they start to invest more and more effort into writing their Scribe Posts. They also begin to get value from it, because when they're studying for tests and when they're behind, right, they go, they click that label for that unit, it all loads, and their textbook's written by kids for kids. And they produce some amazing work. Not every kid does that. I don't need every kid to do that. But what's happening is, it's not coming from me. That student chose to do 2 hours was not the assignment I gave. The assignment I gave was write a brief summary of what you learned in class that day and make sure you put enough detail so that people can understand what happened. That's it. The students begin to compete with each other. And so when they produce something really excellent, I created something called the Scribe Post Hall of Fame. And when a student does something that's just kind of head and shoulders above what anyone else has done, then they get inducted into the Scribe Post Hall of Fame, which I'll show you in half a sec. The, I don't know if you caught the comment by the last student. The last student, Graham, says, well, audio doesn't always tell the whole story. Sometimes audio can be false. Nor do pictures always tell the whole story, right? But in the text, we can see the text and either it flows or not. There's an interesting comment for me. I had told them a story about a podcast that I recorded with one of my classes, and in the podcast, there is a girl speaks and then the class laughs. Now, now it sounds like they're laughing at her. That's not what happened, but that's the way it sounds. And I didn't like that. So I took the laughter and audacity, and I cut it out, and moved it so that it was in front of where she speaks. And so then it sounds like they're laughing, and then she speaks, it makes it sound like she's laughing. They're laughing with her, not at her. I tell them that. I say, like, audio, you know, anybody can remix audio. It's really easy. Like, really, really easy. Pictures, too, can be modified. I mean, we've seen that all the time. If not, I can show you some great stuff on Google Video. Or YouTube. But so Hayden, he picks up on that, and he says, text is better. He says, we need it all.
Who chooses the Hall of Fame?
Excellent question. Let me listen to what one of my students had to say about the Hall of Fame, and then let's look at it and
after
see.
After investing so much time into doing these online works, you just feel proud of yourself after everything's done. Like, oh, wow, I can do this, and oh, wow, it's pretty. And your student, fellow students, peers, classmates, they recognize it too, and then after looking at it, they want to do better as well. That's why we have the Hall of Fame. When I see other people doing good work, you want to do that good work to match that, so you won't be behind them. And I don't like to be beaten myself, so.
That was Bob. There's Bob. I'm embarrassing him. So here, this is where he's talking about
exactly
the move that his kids were.
That's what I thought.
So let me show you the Scribe Post Hall of Fame as it loads. At the beginning of the semester, I look at the students' work, and if they do something really head and shoulders above anybody else, I put them in the Hall of Fame, which is just a list here. This is this year's Hall of Fame, the archive of last year's Hall of Fame. And so if you look, it's really just a table where the first, and Jefferson, interesting thing is happening. Jefferson was in my class the semester before, and so he starts the next class with me again and volunteers to be the first scribe and does something, scribe number one. It's just all completely over the top. I'll show you what he did. But that really set the bar high because here's a kid who's done this, right, and said, no, scribe post is not a paragraph. A scribe post is supposed to be, you know. And so the kids who were new to this were going, wow. And the standard rose so high, so fast in that class, I no longer felt competent to decide whether it belongs in the Hall of Fame or not, because I was of the opinion that they all belonged in the Hall of Fame. So you see that was, and I'll show you the scribe post in a sec. So that was September 11th. I inducted him, and I give a reason for why. So it's great depth of detail, meaningful use of color and graphics to illustrate the text. Now, if we scroll down here, you'll notice that there's other grades in here, grade 10, inducted by me. If we keep scrolling down, look in the column here where you see my name, voted in by classmates. See, I said it's not up to me anymore. It's up to you. In order for a scribe post to get inducted into the Hall of Fame, it has to receive so many votes. I said, well, now should they... I said, are teachers allowed to vote? Because we have other teachers looking at our classes, and they comment to my kids, right? So I said, well, do their votes count? Now, some classes said no. It has to only be students that vote. Some classes said, yes, teachers can vote, but there has to be a majority of student votes. And other classes say, well, it doesn't matter. You get... Now, I said, well, how many votes get you into the Hall of Fame? We have a whole conversation about this. Actually, we podcasted one of them. It's recorded on the Calculus Forum somewhere. And every class chooses a different number. Some classes set the standard really high, and they say, well, at least half the class has to vote. Some classes say 5 votes get you in. So it varies from class to class, and each class gets to choose. And then if we keep scrolling down, you'll see eventually my name will no longer appear at all. It's all about voting. You'll also notice that if you look at the grade levels, you'll see we have grade 10 and grade 8 voted in by Aaron Armstrong as a colleague of mine teaching another class. Chris Hartnick is a teacher of mine, is a colleague from another school. So the Scribe Post Hall of Fame is there for you as well. And you'll notice that this column indicates the subject. So these are math teachers that are getting involved because they're learning the ideas from me. But, you know, whatever you teach, you're welcome to come here and add your stuff into the Hall of Fame. When you come into the Hall of Fame and you choose to add your stuff, click on the sidebar. There's some interesting resources here. Learn about Scribe Post, which is essentially written for you folks. Here's classes that use the Scribe of Fame, contribute to the wiki, and then, well, let me show you Jefferson's post. This one made it into the Hall of Fame. You see he's got a badge on it. This post inducted into the Scribe Post Hall of Fame. If you click on the badge, it jumps you right into the, links you, power the link, links you right into the class, into the, sorry, the Hall of Fame. And so if we look at what Jefferson wrote, this is the very first class that he's talking about. And he immediately has graphics and text. Those colors are connected to the picture. Like every time he changes color, it's a meaningful change of color. And the same meaningful change is here in this image as well. And he persists in that all the way through his post. This is the very first class. Understand, that's a student who's graduated from me, right? He's been with you once, and then he comes back. So now imagine all the teachers in your school do this, and the kids graduate to the next level. Like, they really push the envelope, and the push is not coming from me. Oh, sorry, I wanted to get back to that. So if you wanted that badge, if you decide to do this, all you have to do is copy this code, if you like that badge, and paste it into your blog, and it will automatically create that badge on your blog. You don't have to know anything, you just copy and paste, and it's got the link built in there automatically as well. So that's all there for you if that's something you're interested in pursuing.
After.
So jamming on my guitar. So we start to use all kinds of other tools. Have I gone over? How much? Yeah. I'm done? Okay. Well, let me just tie it off.
All the labels are there. If you want to click on, say, circular functions, just have to click.
I'm going to just race through this. If you're thinking seriously about pedagogy, there's these resources that I highly recommend, all free on the internet. This one you have to pay for. Coming of age. K-12 Online, have you heard of that? Okay, K-12 Online, I'm actually one of the original founders of that. It's an online conference, all free, people from all over the world. It's coming up in October. It takes place entirely online. We have an incredible lineup of speakers and incredible stuff coming up. And those presentations, all free, always available forever. K-12 Online 06 is still available. You want to learn about blogs, wikis, podcasts, more? It's all there. You want to learn about the pedagogy? It's all there. You want to learn about how to get a computer lab in your school? It's there. Everything, like, it's a wonderful thing. I had a lot here. I told you, right? I had tried to do 8 and 1, and today I was trying to go down to 3. Yeah, some of you may have seen that before. You've seen the 5-Minute University? Yeah. It's too bad, because it's hilarious. I was saying, you know, with Bloom's revised taxonomy, we often teach here. We like to be teaching here. I don't like the picture, because it de-emphasizes the highest level of thinking. I think it should look like this. Because once you're creating, then it incorporates all of those lower levels. So there's the photo credits. I want to give the last word to Brittany.
Students are sometimes too focused on writing down notes or, as the teacher's talking, of the examples he's given. But with a blog, you have one student that does that, and you can always refer back to that so you can pay more attention and, in turn, possibly learn more.
Thanks.